Welcome to episode 7 of the Ask the Law Firm Seller Show. My name is Jeremy Pook and I lead Senior Attorney Match. In today's episode, we'll have 3 segments. The first segment is a Q&A segment where we'll address 4 questions related to the purchase and sale of law firms. Second segment is we welcome in a guest, which is a solo attorney, Attorney David Cohen, who leads a solo practice focusing on intellectual property law based in Manhattan. And the third segment is Pook's Post. And this is a preview for Pook's Post today. It's going to focus on why should more growing law firms pursue growth by acquisition in the mid-2020s. So let's jump right into it with our first segment, Q&A. Our first question. So our first question today is, when a lawyer sells a practice to another firm, who is entitled to the uncollected receivables for previously billed work? And that question is asked by Elizabeth Zelenka of Encore Co. So Elizabeth, thanks so much for your question. When it comes to negotiating the unbilled services, that is the WIP, right? The work in progress when a firm is in the process of selling its practice. We're showing here that what we find is that there are 6 meetings needed to sell a law practice generally. During the due diligence phase, which is the second of the 6 meetings, is when the selling law firm is typically sharing with a purchasing firm their books, right? Their P&Ls, their billing practices, and that's when the work in progress typically comes up. The work in progress for billable hour firms can certainly be very easily measured in terms of, okay, how much billing are we doing? How often are we billing, which is typically monthly? And then when a sale could happen and we're negotiating an agreement and then signing an agreement, typically there's a portion in the agreement that speaks to how do we deal with not only that work in progress, but the accounts receivables. And often both of them accrue towards the seller. That is, the seller gets credit for the work in progress that's collected by the buyer, and any accounts receivables that are owed to a seller are typically paid out and received by that seller. Where the negotiations can get a little more complicated is when there are flat fees, okay, which happens a lot in estate planning, and we look at how much of a flat fee, and whether that's also estate planning, criminal law, immigration law, different practice areas where there are flat fees, so that becomes negotiated. And then also when it comes to contingency-based firms, okay, what happens in a contingency matter, let's say in a personal injury law matter, when that type of firm is being sold, there the measurement is not so much work in progress, but quantum merit, and it just is always negotiated between, again, looking at the 6 meetings needed to sell a law practice, between meetings 2 through 5, we're looking at it during due diligence, we're negotiating a letter of intent, we sign a letter of intent, and then we negotiate an actual agreement. Among those meetings, there's a lot of number crunching, a lot of disclosures, and then there's negotiations on what those terms are when it comes to that work in progress and the accounts receivables, and it definitely is all covered during those meetings between the initial meet and greet and actually signing an agreement. So, Elizabeth, thank you so much for that question. For our next question today, our next question is, how do the parties in law firm sales typically deal with ongoing ethical obligations, such as client retention, original records, and roles like trustee appointments? And this question is asked by Elizabeth Zelenka of Encore Co. So Elizabeth, thank you for that question. When it comes to those different points that Elizabeth brings up, all of these points are negotiated when firms start their due diligence process. When a law firm is considering to purchase another firm, they're doing all types of due diligence in terms of finding out, all right, what is that final retention policy of the selling attorney? How do they handle original records? So just to get a little bit into the weeds, when we're negotiating law firm sales, we're typically identifying, when it comes to files, we're identifying the open matters. That's a no-brainer, right? The open matters come over to the buying firm. We're typically also saying, well, the recently closed matters, right? These are matters, let's say within a 7-year period, can be less, depending on the practice type. Perhaps those files are coming over to a buying firm as well. When it comes to, you know, closed files over a certain number of years, what we find often is that buyers really don't want to take on particularly the paper files of senior attorneys that go back, let's say, more than 7 years, except for, as Elizabeth points out, original records, right? I mean, if you're an estate planning firm and you've got original wills and original other types of documents that are valuable to the future of the firm, then for sure, those types of original documents can stay. But if, let's say, a real estate firm and that firm happens to have the records from the sales that they, that they were the lawyers on from 10 plus years ago, in our experience, often the buyers will say, please, you know, you, Mr. or Ms. Seller, you need to either return those files to clients, destroy the files, or proverbially speaking, they wind up in the seller's basement. And by the way, that's not necessarily proverbially. Sometimes that actually does happen. Now, Elizabeth also asked about trustee appointments. So we've talked to that specifically and then more generally. What we find during the during the negotiations is that there can be what we call carve-outs. Okay, that is, on trustee appointments is a good example, because for estate planners, sometimes the clients will ask that a particular attorney, let's say is the senior attorney, would serve as the trustee or as personal representative, executor of a will. And that is something where the senior attorney may say, well, I'd like to continue in that role and be paid in a certain way because I'm really providing that service myself, and maybe that's not part of how we are otherwise categorizing the revenues that are going to come into the firm that a senior attorney can be paid upon. There also can be in certain transactions where there are certain cases where a senior attorney may say, well, we want special treatment for this type of case because I've been working on it for so many years, and I want, let's say, special treatment, carve-out type treatment. So I'll just point out again here that during the negotiations, the parties learn about all types of matters that a selling firm has, and that trustee type of matter and other types of matters could be subject to particular special terms, what we often call carve-outs. It's also important to point out checklists. Because Elizabeth brings up in this question about the treatment of files and original records and trustee appointments, that we have developed a number of checklists that senior attorneys should be keeping in mind when they're considering to sell their law practice. And a significant one, as senior attorneys are contemplating selling your law practice, is the files. Okay, now many firms today are moving to become paperless. I can tell you that my first client had 300 paper boxes in the basement of their building that 3 years before he was contemplating selling had a flood in the basement. Okay, and so of course there were destroyed records. I mean, a big to-do, okay? But for sure, you should be thinking about file retention, which files you can return, which files in your jurisdiction that perhaps you could destroy, which types of originals that a buying firm is going to want and really need because they're valuable to the practice, such as, of course, something like original wills. So thank you, Elizabeth, for that question. For our next question, is, how should a lawyer handle malpractice risk in succession planning? And that question is also asked by Elizabeth Zelenka of Oncorica. So Elizabeth, this question comes up in every law firm sale, which is the malpractice insurance. And what we're showing here are our three checklists to review before selling a law practice. And those three checklists, just categorically wise, fall into three categories. The logistics involved with selling a law practice, now is the right time to sell your law firm, and the rules of professional conduct to consider. So for this question about malpractice insurance, that's really under the logistics involved. In almost every law firm sale that we have handled, I think about every single law firm sale that we have handled has involved the selling firm obtaining a tail policy that covers the prior acts of the firm. because the buying firm will want the senior attorney who typically joins the growing law firm, that when that senior attorney and other attorneys from the senior attorney-led firm join a buyer's firm, the buying firm is typically going to want to start their malpractice insurance coverage as of the date that those lawyers join their firm. Hence why the senior attorney, the selling firm, will need to purchase a tail policy. So how do you do that and how much does it cost? Okay. In your malpractice insurance policy, which most, if not all, attorneys carry, there's a section in there. It's called the extended reporting period, the ERP. So it's important to look at that when you're planning to sell your law practice because it's not cheap. And the way the ERP is laid out is that it's a multiple number, and most of our clients will obtain the I'll call it infinite, but that's not the actual terminology, the unlimited number of years for that will cover an aggregate amount, which is your aggregate amount of the year that you would purchase the tail policy. When I said it's not cheap, what we're seeing in the marketplace is it runs from anywhere from a 2.25x to a 2.75x of your current year's policy premium. So some firms can have premiums in a four-figure amount. Some firms can have premiums in a five-figure amount, even a six-figure amount for large enough firms, heck, even seven-figure amounts. Our clients typically have four-figure and five-figure amounts. So when you're factoring the sale of a law firm and that malpractice insurance risk, because a buyer is going to demand in all likelihood that a seller obtain the tail policy, just to be cognizant of how much that's going to cost. And there can be some interesting planning that can happen with the purchase of a malpractice insurance tail policy. And you can certainly work with your broker on planning for that, because that is often a five-figure purchase, even for clients that have, you know, four-figure annual premium policy amounts. Okay, so now for our next question. Our next question is, how do you envision the market for law firm sales in the mid-2020s? Boy, that's a very interesting question. We're putting a lot of thought into that question as we're now in the mid-2020s. What we certainly envision is that law firm sales 1.0 is going to continue throughout the mid-2020s. Where law firm sales 1.0 is based upon an earnout price. That is, if you're a senior attorney, and what we're typically defining as senior attorneys, as attorneys who have practiced more than 30 years and run what we call a small business law firm. That is, a law firm that has 20 lawyers or less, and by and large, it's built upon the goodwill of one or more senior attorneys at that firm, where its primary value components are its client list and its referral source list. And in terms of how they developed that client list and that referral source list, is in the pre-Google era, they developed their client list and referral source list, which created their book of business. And we're just going to show this book of business. Infographic, which shows that today's senior attorneys developed their books of business pre-Google. Okay. They developed it what we call the hard way, via in-person networking, non-digital thought leadership, writing articles, appearing and teaching at CLEs and other forms of thought leadership, by attending all types of events and taking out ads and ad books for those events, and the pre-Y2K advertising, whether that's the white pages, the yellow pages, ads on the radio, and ads on TV. Well, of course, change happens, and we're now in what we call the 3.0 digital era for law firms. And when it comes to business development post 2020 in this 3.0 digital era, law firms today, that is growing law firms in particular, and what we're seeing in the marketplace, not as much among senior attorney-led firms, they are developing clients digitally based upon a Google-centric approach because clients by and large are going straight to Google. They are going onto social media platforms. They are reading Google reviews. And that is how the clients are coming into law firms and how law firms today are advertising and marketing to develop new clients. And there's also the pre-Google 1.0, that word of mouth era still exists, right? Post-COVID, we are certainly going back into in-person networking type events. We're still putting ads into newspapers and ad journals and other types of imprint, but we are absolutely in this 3.0 digital era. And just to show why we are in this era, it's really because the clients pulled us into it, right? In 2020, we all know that key word in 2020 was pivot. The world, society, clients for law firms pivoted digitally. And because the clients are looking for their lawyers online and they're digitally looking for them in multiple ways, whether that's Google, they're looking and finding them via content that they see on LinkedIn, Facebook groups and Facebook posts that they are seeing. They're watching YouTube videos and again reading Google reviews on the websites of growing law firms that they are looking for. So in terms of bringing this back to the vision that we see for law firm sales in the mid 2020s, what we're looking at here is that a growing law firm today, okay, what is it that they need as they're continuing to grow? They need more clients, they need an experienced workforce, and more because we're in the 3.0 digital era, they need digital content. So just to look again at that law firm sales 1.0, okay, that is in the mid 2020s, we're going to see that growing law firms, they want and need clients and they want and need referral sources. So senior attorneys, in terms of the synergy value that senior attorneys offer to those growing law firms, well, those senior attorneys offer instant client growth, that combined workforce, they have cumulative experience among the senior attorneys and the support staff that senior attorneys have, including their lawyer staff, and that marketing value to support the growing amount of digital value that and digital content that today's growing law firms need. A big but, though, for senior attorneys in the mid-2020s is that those senior attorneys that built their book of business pre-Google, because they are not investing in and developing clients digitally, what we're finding is that senior attorney-led firms today, they are not presenting as much of a book of business clients-wise to growing firms because they're not replenishing their clients as much as yesteryear due to not investing in that digital marketing. In addition, as senior attorneys are aging and their lawyers that work with them really only want a job and they're not prepared to purchase senior attorney-led firms, sometimes those lawyers that have been long time working with senior attorneys, they unexpectedly leave, which makes their law firms less valuable to growing firms because they have less clients and not as strong of a workforce as they may right now. So the overall message in terms of that vision that we have for law firm sales in the mid-2020s is that senior attorneys for now have what growing law firms need. That is the clients, the cumulative workforce, and the digital content. But we really believe that their firms are worth more now than they will be towards the end of this decade because their books of business are not being replenished as much as yesteryear. Okay, in terms of a second segment for today's episode, is I'm excited to welcome in attorney David Cohen. David is a solo attorney based in Manhattan, focuses on intellectual property law, and we're going to talk about the interest of David and sort of solo attorneys generally and the opportunities that growth by acquisition presents. So, David, welcome. Love to learn a little more and have you share your bio with our audience.
Thank you. Thank you, Jeremy. Pleasure to be here. So it's fascinating discussion ahead of time. I was listening in. So my story, I always say it's simple, but never believe a lawyer when he says something is simple. So my story, frustrated academic, big firm, little firm, mostly focusing on IP, worked for Nokia for around 5 years in-house, where I managed some of their largest IP litigation from the perspective of generating revenue for the company. And then from there, I was chief legal and IP officer of a microcap that focused on generating revenue from technology development and licensing, more often than not through litigation and aggressive licensing campaigns. And I've been on my own since 2017, and I focus on intellectual property, that's correct, but mostly on monetization and how to make money from your intellectual property, predominantly patents and trade secrets, and for the most part, predominantly through licensing or litigation. I have two entities. I have a law firm and a consultancy. And what I think is unique about my practice is, yes, I do the traditional blocking and tackling that anyone would do in my space, but I really focus on the business side of law, using the law as a business instrument to develop your revenue, to develop other things. And I spend a lot of time doing what I call IP market making, which is marrying business, law, other law firms, and funding other law firms and rights holders to create a whole package to create a licensing or technology transfer vehicle. And that's sort of related to why we're here, in that it's just me doing a lot of stuff by myself across a lot of different domains. And, you know, there's finding quality people isn't easy. Building your own practice from scratch and developing, finding quality people from scratch is much harder. And so, you know, when we first met a while back, I was very intrigued by sort of the business concept. And the more I talk about it, the more I learn about it, the more interesting it is.
Great. So that leads right into our question, David, which is, you know, what excites you about succeeding to a senior attorney's practice?
Yeah, so there's a lot of things, you know, and I'm going to use weasel words. We used to joke it when I was at SCAD, in that, you know, you did the spell check, you did the grammar check, now you got to do the weasel check and give the caveats. But I'm opportunistic because I have to be. I call myself an entrepreneur not by choice. I had to go do my own thing. And I'm sort of making it up on the fly, which is one way to say it. The other way to say it is I'm opportunistic. I follow where the opportunities are based on what's available to me and makes the most sense for my skill sets and interests. So how does that relate to succeeding a senior attorney? There's a lot of ways that I can find a senior attorney. I am not set. I don't have a specific profile in mind that has as a high degree of criteria. There's a lot of different ways that it could work, right? And one way would be there's a senior attorney who has a practice who's looking to just slowly get out or get out quickly, depending on the needs. And it would be interesting to me to that creates a whole existing infrastructure of client generation. Clients who I can cross-sell. A lot of what I offer is unique, and the typical attorney does not have it. I offer, and so there could be an overlap as I learn senior attorney's business and how he conducts stuff with the clients. I could cross-sell a lot of the services that I could provide. Or if by some chance I meet someone who does what I do, part of the reason why it's so challenging what I do is that, you know, I don't have the staff, I don't have the people in-house, as it were, to bounce ideas off of and to help develop them. And you know, we can talk about that whole sort of trajectory of how I could develop a sort of an established attorney's practice. But the other thing too is for better or worse, and I don't say this pejoratively, I think there's an underappreciation of middle management in this society as a whole, and that's a whole other political discussion. But I've been a legal manager for the past 15 years. And another opportunity could be is a senior attorney or a senior-ish attorney who is looking to get out slowly or soon, but needs someone who can manage the business, and they don't want to because they hate that. They don't want to do that. They're sick and tired of this. They're too old for this stuff. They just want to work on their with their clients that they like. And but they don't want to just hire a professional manager for hire who doesn't understand law firm, doesn't understand the business, and doesn't understand the practice. And, in my experience, the managers who understand what they're managing and can do it if they had to, or if they want to, is probably the best kind of manager. And so it would be, it depends on the opportunity, but there is an opportunity to me to come in, from my perspective, to come in and find a law firm where, for whatever reason, it could be any, obviously it shouldn't be the reasons that indicate that the law firm is slowly circling down the drain. But, for whatever reason, the senior attorney or the person in charge is no longer interested in being in charge and just wants to do their thing. There's a great opportunity for me to help develop that firm, bring it into the 21st century, whatever you want to call it, and develop the business, but also manage and take over the less glorious things and slowly take over the practice as well as the law firm eases themselves out. So from, the bottom line is I'm a legal businessman. I do law. I do business. Yes, the ethics rules make my head explode every time. I have a number of opinions to the various ethics bars and I'm like, it is what it is, but I have a consultancy, I have a law firm and I recognize that, but the way I view it and the way I like to give my clients is the holistic business approach to the law and the legal instruments. And I would view that the same way to any opportunity. If there was a way for me to help and both make my life easier by getting more clients, helping, getting synergies from client and lead generation, getting synergies for internet, as you were noting before, internet and all that lovely electronic stuff that the interwebs have imposed on us, thought leadership is so important, especially in what I do. But also just gets lonely, someone to talk to who understands your stuff, right? You know, I have friends, I have colleagues but I can't, it's hard for me to commiserate about stuff that's highly confidential and privileged with someone who's not, right? And it's so important. So, all of those things and probably many more.
Great. So, David, in the few minutes that we have left, you brought up something that we've talked about before and that I'm absolutely seeing in the marketplace, which is that most senior attorneys that have younger attorneys that work with them, they would love for those younger attorneys to be able to take over the practice. Often the younger attorneys, they don't want them. They can't afford to, okay? The prospect of joining another firm at this point in their careers, they recognize the opportunity. Logistically, it's tough, right? We see it. What you bring up is something that makes me think back of my maternal grandfather. I loved hearing these stories that he would tell me about, the Boston Braves baseball team, had player managers. And that's what I hear when you talk about the solo attorney that is a business person and an attorney that would have the skill set to come into a senior attorney-led firms and both play, that is practice, and also manage. So if you could just share a few more thoughts on that, of what that opportunity could be of you not just taking in a solo senior attorney, but perhaps taking over the management of a senior attorney-led firm as the senior attorneys start to phase out and wearing that business hat that you have and the practitioner hat to continue that law firm.
Yeah. So I mean, gonna throw out some stereotypes here, but just like if you talk to any lawyer, you'll find that doctors and dentists are terrible business people. But frankly, so are lawyers. They're terrible business people. They hate managing. And in my experience, big firm, small firm, little firm, micro firm, most lawyers don't like the business of managing other people. And oddly enough, even the most bulldog litigators tend to be non-confrontational in their day-to-day life to the extent that they're functional human beings. That's a whole other kettle of fish about successful litigators who are not functional human beings. But leaving that aside, I talk to people and I see there's an opportunity to come in there and take over the stuff that they don't really want to do, that they have to do by necessity, which is managing the firm, coming up with out of the box thinking about strategic growth for the firm, areas, a lot of the thought leadership that is not, hey, let me talk about my what I'm working on today or what I like to work on or some interesting thing I developed, but let me do some thought leadership about where I want the firm to be to start developing a business practice, because now people understand that I'm a thought leader in the space. And so, and then of course, you know, the mundane stuff that all the lawyers, everyone hates to complain, likes to complain about. But that's an opportunity for me because it is what it is, and I'm happy to do it. And I'm still young enough to have the stamina to do, you know, the basic managing and stuff like that. So there's a whole bunch of things that are important that exist that most lawyers will do reluctantly, if at all. And I'm more than happy to do that. And I see that's a great opportunity for me to come in and sort of take an existing practice to the next level, because I, and there would be a lot, but like all these things, right? And that's why I think the player manager point is great. Contracts, agreements are only worth as much as your trust of the other person signing the other document. And how do you build trust? You build trust through shared experience and through viewing their ability to do the tasks that they have to do. And so if you're a lawyer, if you're a practicing manager or, you know, player manager, the other members see that you play, you know how to play, right? But you're also managing them. And so that creates respect. You're not just some dude who came in and is giving orders.
Wonderful. David Cohen, thank you so much for joining. Thanks for that great perspective as a solo attorney and the opportunities that solos similar to yourself present to senior attorneys as they're thinking about succession planning and sales of their practices. David, great to see you. Thanks so much.
Likewise. Take care. Be well.
Thank you. Okay, so for our third segment today, Pook's Post. Our Pook's Post today is why more growing law firms should pursue growth by acquisition. So let's look first at what we'll call a prototypical growing law firm. That is, a growing law firm, as we see it, they have built up a number of practice areas. Those practice areas are based on what we call six foundations. Okay, and those six foundations consist of clients, right? You need clients to be practicing in those practice areas. The goodwill that the growing law firm has developed in their community, state, regionally, nationally, sometimes even internationally. They know the subject matter knowledge that attracts the clients into their firm. They've got lawyers and support staff to be generating that work. They've got referral sources that are sending in work and more in what we call the 3.0 digital era. They are pumping out digital content to be attracting new clients. Well, what is it that they need, right? If you're a growing law firm, of course, first and foremost, you need new clients. Secondly, you need more professional staff, lawyers and non-lawyer staff, and more you need that digital content for the multi-channel digital marketing that the post-2020 type law firms need to continue to publish to multiple fora of multi-channel digital for multi-channel digital marketing. Well, how is that done in terms of developing clients today, right? We've mentioned several times that multi-channel digital marketing in the 3.0 digital era, that marketing is showing up in these different channels where there is a growing number of competing firms that also recognize that, hey, we want to be on the first page of Google as well. We want to have a top performing podcast. We want to have YouTube videos. Essentially, what we're talking about is that growing law firms recognize that in this 3.0 digital era, they need to be getting the attention of would-be clients, and would-be clients today, by and large, are going to what we call America's greatest referral source for lawyers today, which is Uncle Google. Well, a very underutilized and under-recognized resource for those all-important clients that growing law firms need is the book of business that senior attorneys developed in the pre-Google era. That is, attorneys that are today in their 50s to their 70s, they developed books of business in the pre-Google era via going to all types of in-person networking. They did all types of thought leadership event sponsorships, and in-print types of marketing that built up a book of business of not only clients, but also referral sources. In addition to that book of business and the referral sources, senior attorney-led firms present synergy value to growing law firms, because those growing law firms are organically considering how to grow their firms. The synergy value that senior attorney-led firms present is instant client growth, that book of business, the combined workforce, not only the senior attorneys, other attorneys at their firms, support staff that know the laws, they know the forms, they know the clerks, they know the lawyers on the other side, and they know the clients as well. The cumulative expertise that senior attorneys, their lawyer staff, and non-lawyer staff have developed often over the course of decades, and the marketing value that senior attorney-led firms are typically not utilizing as much as they could, but because of that cumulative expertise that so many senior attorneys have developed over the course of their careers, can really convert into and generate literally tons of digital content that growing law firms want and need. And just to show this in a different type of format, when it comes to the business development opportunities that senior attorney-led firms present, we like to say that they offer windmills of energy, okay? They really power business development for growing law firms, because that client list and referral source list, absolutely that powers and generates new clients, but also the goodwill of senior attorneys and other attorneys at their firm, the subject matter knowledge and that digital value really presents a very powerful way for growing law firms to continue growing. That is growth by acquisition. And then the question comes up of, okay, how is it done, right? That is, we've got the client list, referral sources that senior attorneys have developed. How is it actually done in terms of the transition of the clients? It's done via trust transfer. And what we are finding from almost all of our clients, and it is that trust transfer works. We refer to trust transfer as the flux capacitor, going back to the Back to the Future movie. It's the flux capacitor of our model for law firm sales, because when senior attorneys are transferring the trust of their clients to the lawyers at their firms, those firms are not losing the clients, because senior attorneys are transferring that well-earned, well-respected trust of their clients in three ways. It's being done in person, that is, let's say at a conference table, via Zoom more and more, where lawyers are going on, that is, senior attorneys are going on to Zoom meetings with the lawyers at growing law firms that are acquiring those senior attorney-led firms, going on to Zoom meetings with lawyers at those firms, introducing the clients, doing the trust transfer over Zoom, happens literally in minutes today. And the clients say, well, if you, my longtime attorney, trust this younger attorney, then I'll trust this younger attorney. And then it's also being done via social media. Like, we're finding that our clients who would typically send out a holiday card once per year, well, that client list can now be converted into a constant contact newsletter. It can be generating connections via LinkedIn and be introducing the lawyers at growing law firms to the clients of senior attorneys via social media as well. So our overall message here is that as growing law firms are considering how they can continue to grow their firms, they really should be considering more and more that the books of business that senior attorneys provide presents an amazing underutilized opportunity to grow your firm, to grow by acquisition. And that is episode 7 of the Ask the Law Firm Seller Show.